Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm John Ledyard, your host from over at FanRagSports.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Ledyard, L-E-D-Y-A-R-D, NFL Draft, along with Trevor Sikkema from PewterReport.com, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You can follow him on Twitter at Tampa Bay Trey, T-R-E. Trevor, a pretty enticing slate of college football playoff games. I thought Georgia-Oklahoma, maybe the ending was a little anticlimactic in some ways. And we'll get into that and why, I think that. I think you may think that as well. Alabama-Clemson kind of went how I envisioned it going. I just wasn't sure Clemson had the offensive firepower to deal with Alabama's defense with a month to prepare, and that's how it shook out. Let's start with Georgia-Oklahoma. I think most people are probably looking forward to, by turning on this podcast, looking forward to our takes on Baker Mayfield's performance. So I have some notes and some thoughts, but what did you take away from watching Baker Mayfield in this game?
I mean, I thought that he was great, personally. There were, I mean, he certainly had his, just like Oklahoma in general, when you play such an air raid style, fast paced offense, you leave yourself vulnerable to, you know, and I think we talked about this earlier in the season. It's great in theory to be able to run the no huddle, to run a ton of different plays, to keep the defense off balance, to run all these plays and drive and like score within 30 seconds. You know, like that's the, like, that's awesome. That's the dream. That's you executing your offense as fast and as efficiently as possible. But when it doesn't work, like the train halts really quick. You know, if you get one or two incomplete passes in a single series or down, you immediately, we just took 11 seconds off the clock and here we are at 3rd and 11 or whatever, you know. So there are drawbacks to the style of offense that he runs, which the key to natural ups and downs of a game. But I mean, let's face it, that first half, Baker Mayfield and that Oklahoma offense was unstoppable. 31 points against Georgia in the first half?
Yeah.
That's insane. That was the most points that Georgia had given up all year, I believe. And they had given it up in the first half. So the second half rolls around. I think they played well early on in the second half, but then they just really hit a lull before that last that last 8 minutes of the game, really, where they kind of were able to turn it on again, get the game into overtime, score enough points to get it there, and we can talk about the overtime in a bit. But those are my impressions of Baker Mayfield. I thought he ran the offense very well. I thought he had another good game against another top opponent. And I think, you know, the Manziel narrative with him is silly. I think it's dead at this point, and that's good. I still think that he performed very, very well, even though it was in a loss.
Yeah, I thought that it was not his best game, but I thought that he wasn't far from the biggest issue. I thought his pocket movement was worse than usual. I think he ran into a couple sacks, and he got a little skittish when things weren't developing. I mean, and here's the thing. You could see this watching the coach from the coach's film. Nobody was open for Oklahoma. And Baker has shown over the course of his career, he is not gun-shy at all. If there's a tight window to be exploited, he'll fit it in there. And he has the velocity to do that. He has the courage to do that as a quarterback. You know, there's no issue there. There was nobody open, man. Georgia has three corners that can all play, can all run with people, and Oklahoma's receivers could not separate. And you could see it time and time again when you were showing the coach's film and showing that all 22, that sky view angle. You could just see he had nothing to do. So I think I understand that a little bit more, but I would like to see a little more poise in the pocket from him. I know it's a big game. You're trying to make something play and be a creator, but I thought he got himself in trouble a couple times as a result of that. He was also under pressure a good bit as well, but I just didn't feel like his escapability was evident in this game like it normally is. And so, I mean, that's not a sharp criticism, but, you know, maybe a soft one there. And then I think one area that it stands out that Mayfield is definitely behind Josh Rosen in is deep ball accuracy and placement. I just think Josh Rosen is far superior in that way when you're throwing the vertical ball. And Mayfield, he puts it in a catchable place. Rosen puts it in a perfect place more often than not, whereas receivers don't have to make crazy adjustments, especially as Rosen's arm has come back over the second half of the year. So to me, that's a big difference between the two players. And I think it'll allow Rosen to play in any system at a higher level. And you don't have to worry as much about him. And you know, and if he gets drafted to a team like, you know, hypothetically, that would run an offense like, say, Arizona's or something like that, a more vertical downfield passing attack, whoever the Giants' new head coach is, whatever that might look like, depending on the coach, I don't think you'd have to worry about Rosen in the system. Like, I don't think you'd necessarily have to worry about Mayfield, but I don't think it necessarily plays to his strengths all the time as well either. So I think that Rosen's just kind of a little more of a universal fit, and Mayfield maybe best in like a spread, quick passing attack, doing some things like John Morton did with the Jets this past season. I think that those will all be options for Mayfield. I don't think he's necessarily a super limited quarterback or anything like that. I just see Rosen as a guy who's a lot better vertically. But yeah, like you said, this wasn't totally on Mayfield. I mean, there's a couple plays in this game where he made, I mean, the touchdown pass to Dimitri Flowers that tied the game in the second half. I mean, yeah, he slid left in the pocket and, you know, threw at a tough angle, gave himself a lane, and, you know, led Flowers perfectly away from pretty tight coverage. I mean, he had some money throws in this game, some big-time drops. CeeDee Lamb dropped people forget about this one, but Oklahoma ended up kicking a field goal. CeeDee Lamb dropped a perfect second-down pass, I think it was, that would have given them, like, a first and goal at the 5. In the first half, he dropped it. It was right between two defenders and right in the breadbasket. Perfect throw by Mayfield, and he dropped it, and that ended up settling for a field goal. And points were big in this one, so that really mattered as well. So I definitely did not think it was Mayfield's best game, but I also thought that the group around him was more of an issue than he was. I didn't take away anything from this game that made me question whether Mayfield can be a franchise quarterback or not. To me, he still can be, and you know, I've stood by that for a while, and I think this game was an indicator of some of the things that he can do really well, on top of some struggles here and there as well.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. But man, how you look at that first half and how Lincoln Riley called that for Oklahoma, yeah. As good as that first half was, how bad was that overtime?
Oh, my
man?
Goodness. What,
like, so the confusing. First, the first overtime period, they literally took the ball out of his hands.
Yeah, they barely
let him. You got the Heisman winner. Yeah. Not only do you have the Heisman winner, you have the Heisman winner at quarterback.
Right. And it was obvious that Oklahoma did not have, like, once Georgia went man-free and matched up with their receivers, it was obvious they didn't have a ton of man beaters. And like 3rd and 13 on the game winning drive, and they're calling that mesh route underneath, or not game winning drive, I'm sorry, the drive that ended up with the missed field goal, Oklahoma's last offensive drive of the game. They're in that 3rd and 13 situation, and they call that mesh route underneath for the, I mean, that's a great play call if it's like 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6. And I know there's not a lot to pick up 3rd and 13, but you could just tell they didn't have a lot of like bunch releases and things like that where players are kind of creating that natural rub with defenders off of each other and getting
right.
Free. He had no way. I thought Lincoln Riley had no way or didn't use ways to get his receivers free for man coverage, which made life really tough for Baker Mayfield as a result. And Oklahoma's receivers, it's hard to really blame them. You know, these guys are like track star, great athletes. You know, they can make plays in space with the ball in their hands. They can run fast vertically. But in terms of nuanced route running and creating separation, they were going to need help with that if Oklahoma was going to be successful offensively. And once Georgia switched teams, I don't know why Georgia didn't start that way, because they have three corners who can cover at a high level. And you knew Oklahoma wasn't going to have seen a lot of that. I mean, any of that type of caliber of defensive back in the Big 12. So I didn't know why they didn't start that way. But once they switched to it, it was really difficult for Oklahoma's offense to get anything going in the passing game.
I just don't, you know my thoughts on the Big 12. I just didn't.
Fake football.
Going into the game, people were like, who do you have winning this game? And I said, I think Georgia's going to win this game because Oklahoma's never faced a defense before. So, like, as much as I still think that, Baker Mayfield is incredibly talented. I still think that that running game that they had was great. I think they have good wide receivers. Mark Andrews, obviously a difference maker, can be a difference maker at tight end. I think they have good offensive line pieces. All those things are true. But I think it's also true that they really did not face a good defense. And that's the thing, is that this was a 1st-to-50 shootout.
Yeah.
And they still couldn't get it done. You know, so that was, I knew that Georgia was going to have Well, I wondered if Georgia was going to have quite enough offensive firepower, because I thought that they were going to run the ball a little bit more than they did. So obviously, when you run the ball, you don't open yourself up to scoring as fast as, say, like an air raid, obviously, like Oklahoma is. Mm-hmm. So even though I knew that Oklahoma going up against a better defense than they've ever faced was going to certainly have its little clashes, I wondered how well the running game for Georgia was going to work out. I said that Georgia was going to win the game, but that how they dominated on the ground
was
just so impressive.
I mean, let's see. Let's just talk about that, because, yeah, Georgia, the only reason that they almost didn't win this game is because they got away from running the ball in the first half, inexplicably. They asked Jake Fromm to throw it, you know, a ton, and I thought early downs they didn't call nearly as many runs, or they just got away from it too much. They tried going play action and throwing the ball when there was just Oklahoma had no answer on the ground. I mean, Sony Michel averaged 17 yards a carry. So let's talk about Sony Michel.
It's ridiculous, man.
Sony Michel is Todd McShay's RB22, someone just told me. RB22. So, I can't even get over that. How do you find 21 draft-eligible dudes in college football better than Sony freaking Michel?
Dude, and you and I have talked about this a little bit before I got my job with Pewter Report that I have right now. I was doing a lot of freelance stuff, and so for the 2 years before then, I was working for a place called SEC Country, and what I did was I would do film breakdowns of kind of like a game, what was like the SEC game of the week. And I remember doing this back in, what year is it? It's 2018 now. It must have been 2015 I was doing this. And I remember watching a Tennessee-Georgia matchup, and it was Josh Dobbs in Tennessee versus Georgia, and this is, I think, the year that Nick Chubb went out with the injury early in the year, and so Sony Michel came in, and I'm watching this running back, and this is like 2 years ago, and I'm not saying this to say like, oh, I would like for I was the first one to see it, like I don't care about that. I'm saying this as in 2 years ago when you would have thought this guy was a less polished running back with less playing time and less experience. He flashed a lot with those things that you see. He does that thing that like LeSean McCoy and sometimes Le'Veon Bell can do, where like he sets a defender up one on one, and it just seems like every single time he wins that little sidestep cut. Every time he makes a miss, and that's so rare. And he was doing that 2 years ago, which when I say that, I mean that when we're seeing it now, it means that he is still just as good at that, and that is in his instincts to make people miss, to have that kind of burst, to see a hole and get through it. I think he was a great running back then, and I remember he caught my eye, and I thought, wow, this kid could be really good. And now, guess what? He is really good, and he is certainly not RB22. I'll tell you that.
I just can't. When I watch Sony Michel, and you tell me if I'm wrong, what is Sony Michel missing? Like, I don't get why. Is it just because he gets like 11 carries a game, but that we don't, we haven't seen him in a feature role? Like, don't make that mistake, because we did that with Kamara, didn't we? And not just right. Kamara, but other players over the years too. If you can, like, he's only doing that because they have Nick Chubb, and they also have a good quarterback, and they have good receivers. Like, he's maximizing every single time he touches the football, and it's not the gimmick stuff that he's getting the ball. He's not a gimmick player. He's running their offense. You know, they do zone schemes. They do power gap schemes. He's running it all at a high level. He has that burst to be able to get the edge.
And his vision is great.
Yeah, his vision's great inside. When he gets in space, it's great. I think he's been better this year at making defenders miss more consistently. He runs behind his pads. He's like a perfect size, like that 5'11", 215, not too much surface area to hit, but he runs low to the ground, and he's packed on muscle. I mean, he's a thick dude, and three touchdowns on the ground, and you could see his receiving ability, four catches, 41 yards. Not only did he made a nice catch to turn back and catch a ball that was away from him, behind him a little bit on the first touchdown for Georgia, But then he also in the second half, I think it was the second half, when Eason kind of got away and was in a scramble drill, or I said Eason, Fromm got away and was in a scramble drill, he hit Sony Michel, and Sony Michel catches the ball, makes a guy miss, runs through and spins off another tackle and maximizes touches. He's a creator of offense. He has the burst, the long speed. He has the power. He has the size. He has the hands. Everybody raves about his character and how selfless he is and all those things. And I just think the guy could be a star at the next level. I don't understand why he's not getting more buzzes. Just because Nick Chubb's always generated the buzz at Georgia and there's another five-star kid, yeah, DeAndre Swift. And is that the reason? Because it just seems silly to me that we're not talking more about Sony Michel. To me, he's the best running back in the college football playoff. I don't know that anybody else I would say is on Michel's level as a running back or all around player at the running back position.
Yeah, no, I think Sony Michel has been great, but just to pause real quick and go back to Nick Chubb, I was so worried about him when he was coming back from that injury because athleticism was such a big deal for him. And the freak aspect about Nick Chubb when he came in as a freshman was that guys who are that big, have that kind of frame, that kind of muscle on them, and be able to move the way that they do. When you tear a ligament, you never know how people are going to come back. And let me tell you, I watched that game yesterday, and the explosion and athleticism that Nick Chubb still had kind of blew me away. He had, I think, two big runs, I'm thinking off the top of my head, where he was able to get down to the sideline. And if it were not for a cornerback who weighs much less than him, who was able to fly from the other side of the field to just barely push him out of bounds, Nick Chubb could have taken a couple of those carries for like 70 yards and a score.
And he did take one.
Yeah, and he would have on the ones that I'm thinking of. You're right. He did have another long
one. The 50-yarder, I think he had. Yeah, 50-yarder.
I was blown away, man. Just the fact that he's able to recover from that the way that he is. So, yeah, that tandem from Georgia, I mean, I tweeted at some point in the game the same thing that everybody has tweeted probably at some point this year. Why does Georgia ever pass the ball? And so these running backs are absolutely phenomenal.
And they can throw it too, though. You know, I mean, I said they can throw it too, though. I do. I agree with you. I think they threw too much, but
that's why. I mean, they're going to win the national championship. I think. I thought that they were my national championship pick once the playoffs kind of came out, and that's very unfortunate because I'm a Florida Gators fan. But I mean, there's no denying it. I think Georgia's the most talented team in the country. And not only are they the most talented team in the country, they win in those X factor ways. Like, they have a fast defense, they have an aggressive defense. Okay, you have that behind you. Then they have an incredible running game, which not only allows them to be explosive, but some like also control the clock at any point they could ever want. And then they have a quarterback who can, when the back is up against the wall, he doesn't have to throw too often. He doesn't have to throw as much as he did last game, but he's a guy who can put the ball where it needs to be to keep drives going. That is the perfect recipe for a team to win a title. So I think that Georgia's going to do it. The running game, that running tandem was a big reason why.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. I think they're the best team, and I think they're better than Alabama. We'll talk more about that as we get closer too. But, you know, to me, Chubb is not as athletic as Michel. I don't think he's as versatile and has the every down ability and, you know, all around ability that Michel has. But as a bell cow type, that with good vision, good decisiveness, I don't think his burst is elite, but I think it's solid burst. You know, he's got enough there. And my biggest thing, I think that he has run through tacklers better this year than he did last year. I think he's shown some of that power and balance and, you know, recovered in that way and shown the ability to stay up through hits. And, you know, I mean, this one touch, his 50-yard touchdown against Oklahoma, he threw off like three tacklers. You know, that was vintage Nick Chubb. Now, I don't think he's as violent or aggressive as some of the best tackle-breaking backs we've seen over the years, but I think he's a good player. I think he's going to go day two. I think he's going to be a solid contributor. You know, again, maybe not that every down impact that somebody like Michel has, but I think he's going to be a really good player at the next level for sure. Another guy I want to talk about, Rodney Anderson from Oklahoma. I mean, 26 carries, 201 yards. This kid's had an unbelievable season. I think he had 900, almost 1,000 yards coming into the year, and he was averaging like 6 yards a carry, and he is five receiving touchdowns, like 300 yards receiving, and I think he's run for like 11 touchdowns, and he's had an unbelievable year for Oklahoma. He's a redshirt sophomore. This class is amazing at running back. If he comes back, though he's splitting carries with Trey Sermon, probably. The guy's a freshman this season. Sermon looks outstanding as well. I think Rodney Anderson could be one of those surprise declaration guys. Like,
dude, he runs pissed off.
Yeah, like, and he's got better speed in the open field. You know, he breaks some long runs that you wouldn't expect him. I remember a game earlier this year. I watched Oklahoma. He got strung out on a, I think it was a counter play to the outside. He got strung out all the way to the sideline. I was like, oh man, this is going for like a 3-yard loss. And I think they were up in the game, and you know, they were up like a point or something, and they really needed to get a touchdown to seal it. He somehow got around the corner and burst upfield after getting strung out to the sideline. Like, he didn't like stop, make a dude miss, and then get vertical. He like somehow rounded that corner and like took off like Dalvin Cook style. I was like, what in the world? He just doesn't look like a guy who has that kind of burst. And you know, I don't see it all the time, but I see enough of it that he's just intriguing. I don't know that he tests great, but I just think he plays like a better athlete, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? He's contributed as a receiver, as a vertical receiver. Like you said, he runs hard, physical behind his pads. He's a big back. I don't know what the market will be like for him yet. I would have to sit down and study with him. I actually thought he was a sophomore, then I just saw he was a redshirt sophomore the other day. I was like, man, he may come out because he's had a monster year. And I don't know that the market's going to be hotter for him, because Trey Sermon is freaking amazing. I mean, this kid's going to be a stud.
Yeah.
He had 2 carries in this game for 34 yards. He barely got to touch the ball.
Wait, he only had 2 carries?
Yeah, 2 carries, because Anderson had 26. They ran the ball 45 times. They've got tons of talent, too. And, I mean, we had 5 unbelievable running backs in this game. And DeAndre Swift didn't really play well in his 4 carries. But, man, there was some really good running back play in this game, and I think Anderson could be a guy that potentially ends up coming out. What about Roquan Smith? What were your thoughts on Roquan Smith? I know early on in the game some people were ragging on him. Then I thought he bounced back, had a great second half. What did you see from him?
No, I think he had a phenomenal second half, especially in that overtime period. I think it was a pretty serious cornerstone for them being able to hold Oklahoma to the field goal, and then Georgia ended up winning in the game. They had a couple plays there where what running back was it? I think it must have been Anderson, but I'm not sure. There was a play where they were coming down to the goal line. They were trying to get in. The running back, whichever guy it was.
I want to say it was Bede on an end around.
But you know what I'm talking about, where he was like almost going for the first down, almost had it, and then all of a sudden he just gets like stood up by Roquan. And there were a couple other plays during the – you know, going back to you saying that Oklahoma doesn't have a lot of man beater plays, especially in that overtime period, it just seemed like they were challenging Georgia's middle of the field with Roquan Smith there, and he came up every single time. And I've seen comparisons to people have said that he's very like Levante David like, and I mean, if he is anything like Levante David, Levante David's one of the best linebackers I've ever seen playing in the NFL. So I thought Roquan had another really great game. It was a great closeout to the game for him, even though I think, you know, at the beginning, the whole Georgia defense was just getting burned a little bit. So good to see them come on the end there. But a lot of people love him. And if you're planning on taking him at – if you're planning on your team taking him at 20, you know, in the 20s or whatever, just because he's a linebacker, I would not plan on that, because he is
not
going
to be there. Yeah, Smith's really interesting to me. I don't think he's Reuben Foster.
Certainly not.
I don't know why we have to do that every year.
Super rare.
Yeah, I don't know why. Why do we have to do that every year? It makes me so mad. Like, Roquan Smith can be a really good player. Reuben Foster was unbelievable to watch. I mean, he was in on every single tackle. I have no doubt in my mind Reuben Foster will be the best linebacker in the NFL if he's able to stay healthy. I mean, he's unbelievable. He's one of the most rare dudes I've ever seen on tape. Roquan Smith is good. Like, there's no question. He's a first-round player. His range sideline to sideline is great. I love that Smith hits low and drives up through people. I think hitting power is one of the most underrated traits of a player, especially middle of the field type players, safeties, linebackers. Like, you want hitting power with those type of guys. Like, you don't want a guy who you're going to slide off of, or who's going to be able to, a running back's going to be able to, you know, fall forward through. And you want guys that are going to send message. And how many times did you see Roquan Smith come up and stick a guy? It was that receiver on the goal line that stands out. His form is just so good.
Yep.
But then also, Oklahoma ran, it was in the first overtime, I want to say. They ran like, I want to say it was a reverse or end around or something like that to the left. And receiver like fought through, somebody read it, Walker, one of the linebackers for Georgia, the other one, he read it 45 and he came flying up. He hit the receiver, but the receiver kind of twisted through his tackle and looked like he was about to reach. And Roquan comes from the backside and just pounds this dude right under his chin strap. I mean, I was like, holy moly. Not only was it range, but it wasn't like his assigned error or anything like that. It's just a cleanup play from a great athlete, you know, coming across the field and just a perfect hit. And he didn't get the first down. That ended up being a massive play in that game because then they go and they kick the field goal instead of getting the first down there. He played at an unbelievable second half, I think. Having said that, I do think there's times where, like, he's not nearly as – the biggest difference between he and Foster, he's not nearly as instinctive to come downhill and play downhill and, you know, and see a key and just attack it. You know, Smith is a little more indecisive at the second level. I do think that will mean he'll probably be best as a Will linebacker who, like, more does clean up and you keep him a little cleaner and, you know, away from the strong side.
But I would want Roquan to play in space anyways. Right. Like, Roquan's the wide receiver I want to play in space. I want him to play Will. I don't want him to play Sam.
Sure. And I think he could potentially play Mike too. And I, you know, so that'll be something we can talk about even more as we move forward. But I think that he's a very good player, but I do think that he's not quite as instinctive as Foster was, but I mean, who is, but I think that could be maybe a little bit of an issue. He'll be a little bit stuck at times and he'll get hung up on blocks as a result. Anderson had a long run because Orlando Brown was able to get down on Roquan. And I think that this isn't going to be a popular take probably, but I don't know if Smith is as great in coverage as we want to believe that he is. Like, he moves well for sure, but there's some issues sometimes with his feel and like his spacing and zone coverage. And, you know, I didn't think that he necessarily made as many plays as he could have because of that. I think he'll need to work on that. How deep does he get?
I'm a lot more comfortable letting that be a repetition thing.
Right. And the other big thing, I think, is can Smith step into the slot and cover players? You know, is that going to be something that he's able to do? I think teams want him to be able to do that. I don't know how natural that's going to be for him right away, but can he learn it? That's the big question.
You throwing in the word natural means something there, because how quickly somebody can naturally pick something up does mean a lot. Yeah. But I mean, you definitely got to remember though, Lavonte David, that's the kind of peak comparison we have because he's one of the best linebackers in the NFL. Even Lavonte David struggles to cover guys when he's in a slot. And so like when you watch, and this is just this isn't towards a you thing, this is kind of just towards the general audience. You know, when you watch linebackers and you watch them drop back into coverage, don't watch them like they're corners. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't watch them thinking that they're necessarily going to have their guys locked down all the time, or that, you know, if the yield catches here and there, that it has to necessarily, you know, go on your scouting notes or in your mind is like, oh, you know, well, he needs to get a little bit better at that. There's only so much a linebacker can do sometimes. You know, if you're a Will linebacker and you're covering guys in a slot, that means that at times you're covering a tight end, you're covering a wide receiver, you're covering a running back. And a lot of times it's not nearly as much of like a blanket coverage as you might normally see, as much as it is like contained. Like, you're containing a guy, you're hoping you're playing tight enough to not warrant a throw. But all I'm saying there is that if a guy's got the athleticism and you know that he's got the plays here and there and you see him do well in coverage as a linebacker, don't necessarily put him up against like a corner or like a guy who don't watch a corner and a linebacker play coverage back to back.
Sure.
It's not going to be able to be the same thing. So I'm not too worried about Roquan there, just because I know the kind of teaching that Lavonte David's been able to get in the NFL and a couple of other good coverage linebackers. That's kind of a next step thing that when you become a pro.
And to be honest, Foster didn't have a lot of experience stepping out into the slot either, you know, but, you know, I think he's done that in the NFL and already done it at a high level. But I do think Roquan will be tested in that way. And yeah, you might not have to match up with wide receivers, but tight ends and running backs for sure. He'll be asked to flex and step out there against teams with all the empty that exists in the NFL today. He'll be asked to do that a good bit. And so him being able to prove that he has that kind of ability, I do think is going to be pretty pretty key for him, because right now he's mostly, you know, middle zone type of guy. And, you know, if you look at some of the other linebackers that have been heralded over the past couple of years, Miles Jack was a guy, for example, had a lot of experience stepping out
in
coverage like that, and was really good in that, and some other guys too. So I do think that'll be something that Roquan has to learn a little bit at the next level. But again, really good player, great second half. Lot to love about Roquan Smith. Definitely a first rounder from everything I've seen so far. Now I know we're running out of time a little bit. Quick thoughts. I think Orlando Brown could be OT1 and Calvin Ridley could be wide receiver one.
No, Calvin Ridley's fantastic. I mean, I wasn't sure if he was wide receiver one as soon as you were, but I mean, you know, like, I've totally coming around to that idea that he can be a top guy. I've watched him for the last couple of years when he's been a starter. Love his footwork, man. I love how he can get in and out of his breaks. He's such a separation monster.
He had four catches for 39 yards last night, and he looked like the best player on the field. Jalen Hurts is awful.
Right.
He had like an 80-yard touchdown or something, but he was wide open down the field, and Hurts underthrows him by like 10 yards. It's like, oh, my gosh. It's driving me nuts. Everybody's going to talk about Ridley's production, but my goodness.
I thought Ridley was great.
I thought Orlando Brown had a really good game, too, for Oklahoma. And I think that – I don't think he's a perfect tackle or anything like that. I don't think he's, like, your ideal, this is a top-10 tackle. I don't know that I necessarily see that, although I still need to finish his eval on his tape study. So I may change that opinion. But I don't think I've seen an offensive tackle better than Brown in all my live watching this year. And I've watched a lot of live games this year. He just does a really good job, and he's good in the run game, and he moves really well for a guy his size, and he plays nasty. And I just think that he has a lot of things that NFL teams are really going to value, and I wonder if he ends up being the best tackle, because I think Connor Williams has some technique issues, and then Williams' ceiling might be higher, but I know I've talked about this a lot, but I just don't know that he's as ready as somebody like Orlando Brown. And not that I think Brown's like an amazing player or anything like that, but in the NFL, if you have first-round ability anywhere close to as an offensive tackle, you're going to go really high. And so I think he could be a guy that ends up going a lot higher than people are talking about right now. He's a good one. Ridley's a good one. Last things we got to touch on, players that we weren't necessarily impressed with. I was really impressed with Rashawn Evans, Minkah Fitzpatrick, but we're running out of time on the show and we can't get to them. But anybody you weren't really that impressed with, and maybe I'll let you think for a second because I've already got a couple people in mind. I didn't really think Mark Andrews had a great game for Oklahoma. I think that he's a good player, but if you man up with him, like, for example, if Minkah was on Mark Andrews for an entire game, I don't know whether Mark Andrews gets free. And I think he's good at combat catches, but I don't think he's great at them. I think Andrews is a good tight end in this class, and he may even be tight end one by the time it's all said and done. But I don't know that I would put a first-round label on what he can do right now. I think that he's going to do some things really well. I'm not sure running away from, like, more athletic safeties or big nickels is going to be something that he does at a high level in the NFL.
I guess I would say that the guy that I was the least impressed with was, and I'm hoping I didn't, like, miss plays while I went to go get food, because if so, I'm going to get killed for this. But, like, I'm just going to say that Bo Scarborough,
yep,
within that Alabama crop of running backs, like, mm-hmm, Damian Harris is clearly the best running back on that team. Like, right, it's not even,
I
agree, close.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have said that before the year, but I do not think that – I think you're absolutely right about Scarborough. I don't think he's nearly as explosive as he was last year. And I don't know whether it's all the injuries mounting up and that broken leg, but, yeah, I mean –
I thought he was fine. You know, it's not like I would say that he himself was, like, bad or something. But when Damian Harris is the other guy getting the ball, Damian Harris is clearly better. So we went into the year thinking that Bo Scarborough could possibly be, like, a top five back, even though he had his age, mm-hmm, and all that, because of his size and perhaps his athleticism and all that. And throughout the year, Damian Harris has just continued to prove that he has the better vision. He's more smooth with the ball in his hands. He knows where to go with it. And, you know, last night's kind of that natural ability stands out a lot more than Scarborough's just plain freak size and strength. So
Scarborough's going to be – I think he's got to come out, obviously, with his age, his injury history. The number of good players in Alabama's backfield. But he hasn't really had a standout type of game this year, you know, against a real quality opponent or anything like that. So – you know, and you know, here he is, 12 carries, 24 yards. He's clearly clearly not producing at the same rate. And I just think the explosiveness just isn't there at this point. I mean, he's obviously a bigger back, 6'2", 235, 240. But I always thought when I watched him last year, he was explosive for his size. Not necessarily overall explosive, but when you're that big and you can move as well as he did. And I just, this year, I just don't think he moves the same way. I mean, he hasn't had a game. He hasn't reached 80 yards rushing in a single game this season. And I know he only gets a certain number of carries, but again, we just talked about this with Sony Michel. He only gets a certain number of carries, yet he still makes it work. You know, Scarborough's got 120 carries this year. 4.8 yards per carry is respectable, but it's not anywhere close to what we've seen running backs average.
I mean, it's college. You know what I'm saying? Like, 4.8 is not a big deal in college.
You can do that in your sleep in college, a lot of these guys anyway.
Right.
But yeah, those were a couple guys. I didn't think Mitch Hyatt from Clemson. I think he should think about going back. I didn't think he looked very good in this game. Deion Kane was another one. I just didn't see him really separate, or it just seemed like Alabama's receivers kind of had those guys on lockdown. Davin Bellamy for Georgia didn't stand out to me. So there were a number of players. These were two incredibly fun games to watch from a scouting perspective. If you didn't have like a rooting interest, you were just like in it to watch great football, man, were these games fun to watch because there were so many great players, and I think we'll see. I mean, potentially, you could have a Minka go in the top 10. You could have Orlando Brown go in the top 10, potentially. Calvin Ridley, Roquan Smith, Baker Mayfield. I mean, how many players in these games? Rashawn Evans is going to go high. I bet you end up having at least 6-7 first-rounders from this weekend from these four teams. I mean, Christian Wilkins, a ton of players. I mean, I think it's a great group and you could tell why these teams got here because there's so much talent on both these rosters, and then they're also incredibly well-coached. So, It was fun games to watch. I think the national championship game is going to be fun. I agree with you. I'm leaning Georgia. A lot more to talk about. We got to talk about the bowl games and everything like that later in the week. Get to some of those matchups, and we'll do that tomorrow and come up with some of our other takeaways from the bowl games that we watched. I wasn't able to see all of them, but we're able to see a good bit, and I know you were able to see a good bit as well. So we'll have lots to discuss and talk about from those games, which I'm going to look forward to as well. Also, Happy New Year. First pod of the new year. We were off yesterday. I forgot to say that. Happy New Year to you, Trevor. Happy New Year to all our fans. And until next time, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.